everyone. Welcome back to Plantaholics. Mm-hmm. This is a part two segment of soil microbes.
Yes.
So last week, if you joined us, just gave kind of an overview of the different types of microbes, and we started going into the history a little bit, which is the point where I'll continue on today. I got a little sidetracked with the rant about farming and gardening and other various applications of microbes that I, of course, would get distracted by.
And I couldn't stop talking about the plushies. So
I approve of that, though. You got, if you haven't listened to last week's, look up giantmicrobes.com. Mm. Worth your time.
Yes.
And money. All right. So like I said before, we got off on a little tangent here. I do want to kind of go over just a few of the people who kind of first discovered microbes and yeah. Kind of started that whole process, because, you know, think about it, no one could really see it until there was a scientist, Antony von Leeuwenhoek. Probably not saying
love
that right
names.
Again. Yep, it's very great. He actually designed his own microscope back in the late 1600s. One of the very first microscopes in existence, as far as we are aware. And he worked with another scientist, Robert Hooke, and he was the first to actually use this microscope to observe living things. So kind of a combination of those two working, not necessarily together, but using the same kind of technology of the day to observe this.
Imagine you're a guy who already came up with this stuff. And, like, just used it for himself, didn't think to share the information. He's like, what? I've had this microscope, I don't know what he would call it, my looky look in my garage for years. What are you talking about? Oh, sorry, oh, I can just totally yep. imagine that.
Yeah, the seriously. But, so Robert Hooke actually came out with a book called Micrographia? Micrographia. Let's go with that. Micrographia. I don't know. Let's go with that. Which actually contained descriptions of plant cells. One of the first, kind of looks into that, that other world. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to call him Antony, because I'm not going to attempt to say his last name again. Yep. Van Leeuwenhoek.
You did a good job.
How would we know?
Yeah. Sounds right to me.
Yeah. So he was actually credited with the discovery of microorganisms in 1675. And of course, it was related to wine, so it was a mystery of why grapes turned into wine or milk into cheese and all that. So he actually kind of at least observed these microorganisms. Didn't really make that connection yet, but that was kind of the first, diving into that that territory. I guess.
I love how that is what started this conversation. Not like, why are we getting sick? Nope, we have
yeah,
that answer.
No.
It's magic. But cheese yeah. and wine? What?
That's
this
gotta
can't be
science. Seriously.
This is a different thing.
Exactly. So a couple other people kind of getting some credit here are Lazzaro Spallanzani.
Nice.
He lived in the 1700s, and he found that boiling broth would sterilize it and kill any microorganisms in it. So he kind of did some experiments related to that. Then probably the most common person with some microbe credit would be Louis Pasteur. So he lived in the 1800s, 1822, 1895, and he expanded upon Spallanzani's work by exposing these boiled broths to the air in different vessels that contained a filter So he kind of looked at it with no filter, with just different varieties, and kind of found the differences between the ones that had microorganisms in it versus the ones that did not. Mm-hmm. He basically kind of concluded that these organisms are coming from the outside. So when something has been boiled, they're not just spontaneously coming out. They're, right. Kind of laying it either in dust or, things that actually go on the surface of the liquid.
I love how all of these, like, important science experiments are, like, the most boiling
broth. Yeah.
I'm going to just put these peas near each other and I'm going to
and
boil
let's see what
broth.
Happens. Yeah, but there's, like, there's this theory at the time called the theory of spontaneous generation. So that that was something that helped to, slowly wean people off of that.
Yeah. There's this theory of spontaneous combustion, which I find hilarious. They believe that people just spontaneously combust. It's just,
sure.
Sorry. You're just gonna dissolve into dust.
Along those lines, yeah. So, gotta... Can't disprove it, but you can prove that it makes no sense.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. So a little bit more recent times, there was a German biologist, Ferdinand Julius Cohn.
Okay.
Cohn? Oh gosh, I'm sorry. Oh gosh. I never know how to pronounce that. It's C-O-H-N. I apologize.
I never know. I feel like
I'm gonna say Cohn. Let's go with that.
Two to zero, Cohn.
Yeah.
It's like 2-1. Who else
two
is here?
It's your gonorrhea.
Yeah, my plushie toy.
Basically, what he brought to the table was classification of bacteria. So he actually grouped them by shape, which is probably really all they could, kind of tell at the time in the 1800s. So there were spherical bacteria, short rods, threads, and spirals. So that's it's still in use today as far as, kind of differentiation, but he's also, I guess, more no, I don't know, if equally known for seeing that bacillus, the bacteria, can change from a vegetative state to what's called an endospore state.
Okay.
So it's a kind of a weird that it was an important discovery. Let's leave it at that. but that's also what he's known for. But anyway, that's just, again, very briefly, just a little bit of history as far as how we kind of came from boiling broth to hypothesizing about wine. I don't know. Right. Here we are.
I wonder if it was similar to, like, realizing the caterpillar and the butterfly are, like, the same thing.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. That's my...
Someone had to do it.
Yeah. Someone had to figure out that they're not two different things.
Right.
This is my best guess.
Exactly. But, yeah, so that was pretty much all I had for more of the history part, but I did want to, kind of dive into the soil here now and look at what's happening near the roots of plants.
Let's dig in.
Exactly. Bon appetit. not really.
Bone broth appetit. Not even.
Ooh. Oh my god. Oh god. Okay.
I love a good broth.
Oh yeah, me too. Bone broth is great. Mm-hmm. All that collagen. Good stuff.
It's calling me, that collagen.
Yes. Oh my gosh. All right. So you've probably heard of nitrogen fixing bacteria. If you've done any sort of plant science class, biology, things like that. So nitrogen fixing I said bacteria, didn't I? I meant plants.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I didn't know, but I was reading the wrong book.
It actually is bacteria, but they call them nitrogen fixing plants. It's not the plant. Let's start with that. So the plants that actually have plants that are called or referred to as nitrogen fixing plants include peas. Pretty much most plants in the legume family. Essentially, what's happening is that there are nitrogen-fixing bacteria called rhizobia, sorry, that are on there. They're particularly attracted to these plants. So they're helping the nitrogen from the atmosphere, which is in a unusable form to plants, and they're actually converting it to a more usable form for the plants to actually absorb. So that's kind of what's happening on that level. So along those lines, diving into the soil here. Mm-hmm. So looking at just kind of, again, the sort of, ecosystem. Jeez, yeah. I was like, ecology. No, that's wrong.
I swear that happens to me all the time.
Oh my God. Too many eco something. So there are three levels of consumers in kind of these soil microbe communities. So you're looking at your primary consumers. Those are the ones that are just going after their organic matter. So these are like beetles, earwigs, earthworms, things like that. Probably usually more the larger organisms. They're kind of breaking down the organic material into smaller components.
Big stuff.
Yes, yeah. So the leaves, the, you know, little pieces of bark, whatever. They're kind of chewing on that and helping.
It's like the human body's mouth. They're the mouth.
Yeah, they are the mouth. They're breaking it down. So there's only simple compounds that remain. So you're looking at different carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen compounds that are a little bit more digestible for the little guys. Mm-hmm. So mites and springtails, as an example, clip away all but the veins of dead leaves. So if you've ever picked up a leaf in the forest and it looks see-through and all you see is the vein pattern.
That's why. Okay.
Yeah, that's those little microbe guys, little mites, little springtails. Those are attacking those leaf, everything but the leaf veins, because the veins are a little harder to digest. So they're just kind of eaten away. So most microbes don't have teeth. They actually have acids and enzymes that they excrete that help break down these plant materials. So fungi and bacteria kind of take the lead on this. They turn dead things back into living things because they're recycling all these nutrients. But they're even able to digest these woody plant parts. So maybe it's the veins in those dead leaves or actual, parts of bark or tree limbs, things like that. They're the ones that are probably going to be excreting those acids and getting those things to break down faster.
Right. Kind of like, you know, flies. They'll vomit on something and then suck it back up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that they have that. That's kind of their contribution to the table. So some fungi have like just super strong symbiosis with other organisms, whether that's plants or other microbes. A best example are the famous truffles in France that they only grow under certain trees, and they really can't be farmed because of that, because they have this such strong tie to these certain trees, these certain soil conditions that they only really grow in these areas. There's networks of fungal hyphae that are actually the largest life forms on Earth because they can form these subterranean networks that extend for miles and miles and miles. Just crazy big organisms with just underground little underground highway. and a single teaspoon of fertile soil can contain a half a mile of fungal hyphae.
That's how prolific they are. The song Life is a Highway now has a completely...
Just look right below your feet. Miles of highway.
Oh my God. Da, 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 da. Sorry, keep going.
Yep, you're good. So what fungi can do, especially in kind of these root environments, they secrete these acids to help break things down. They actually do it from the growing tips of the hyphae. And then from there, the bacteria kind of decomposes everything further with their own chemicals. And then protists specialize in hunting bacteria and eating hyphae. So that's just a kind of other level, keep the ecosystem in balance kind of thing. Nematodes are another great example. They're a type of microscopic worm-like creature, smaller than a grain of sand. They're super tiny. But they also prey on protists as well as bacteria. So kind of more of the secondary consumers that we're looking at are our tertiary consumers. There's a lot of like predator prey interactions among microbes. Some kind of go both ways. So it's kind of a complex sort of web. I'll put that on our Instagram as well. There's like a cool diagram of some of the main interactions between the microbes. It's kind of awesome. Cool. So a lot of interactions going on, a lot of eating things and various sizes. It's very interesting.
What am I gonna be today? Predator or prey?
Yeah. We'll find out. Yeah. But yeah, like, cause even earthworm, you know, when they die, they, you know, get eaten up too. So yeah. It's kind of a little cycle that goes on. Mm-hmm. So until recently, scientists thought that all organic matter in soil came from dead plant matter. But experiments indicate that dead microbes account for about 80% of organic soil matter.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah. So it's if like you're looking at some rich
microbe carcasses.
I like corpses.
Corpses.
Corpsicle.
Carcasses and corpses. Jeez.
Got it all.
Too many different ways to talk about dead bodies.
Too many. And the random hybrids that come out of that. But yeah, so crazy. Like 80%. Like, yeah, think about that. So
that is amazing.
Look, I mean, think of your traditional farm again. You know, like right. They're destroying their microbial communities. What's left? It's just clay.
Yuck.
That's all you're left with. There's nothing going on there. It's not a broth.
It's an empty bowl.
It's like a boiled broth
in
sterile lab conditions.
Seriously, people.
No one wants that.
No one. We want some carrots and celery. Make it a soup.
Yeah. A delicious microbe stew. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like so good right now.
Oh, you know what's a good probiotic? Prebiotic, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Miso soup.
I've heard that. It's really good.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think it's delicious and great for your gut health.
Easy.
Yep. And fantastic tasting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. So, again, kind of going back into the random
now I want
facts
soup.
Here. Oh my god, yeah, that sounds really good. I wish it was colder. That would sound even better. I almost made soup today, but it was too late. And I was like, okay, 6 o'clock. If I start making soup now, it'll be like 10 o'clock.
I've been so lazy. I've literally just been heating up chicken broth and just like throwing seasoning in it.
I don't think that's eating.
It's
that
so
is
good.
Drinking.
I'm on a liquid diet.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
But...
No, it's I start craving things that I want to chew on. It's that bad. I just keep drinking soup. It's just so good. It just sounds so good.
Oh my gosh. Yes. All right. Yeah. So again, looking at the roots of plants. So how does this kind of tie into the actual underground soil and root life of the plant?
Right.
So essentially these, all of these microbes, again, we're talking about this little ecosystem that's being created. They're all doing different things to benefit the plant. So nitrogen fixing bacteria is probably the, you know, simplest example, as far as that's obviously helping, the plant uptake nitrogen, but all of these microbes have different functions. So essentially the plant really wants these microbes around. They want to keep them close by. They want to keep a healthy community going. So plants actually secrete nutrients, usually in the form of carbohydrates, which just exude from the roots into the soil, and they attract all these beneficial microbes because the microbes want to eat too. So they're heading over and they actually congregate around all of these roots, and
like
they
the
feed.
Dinner table.
Exactly. It's like a nice little dinner bell for them. So not only do they exude carbohydrate type materials, but it's amino acids, vitamins, and other phytochemicals that attract the microbes that they love to eat up. So it's kind of like a mucus that they release. They kind of slough those off as dead cells. And that's kind of what the microbes are eating up. So that tasty. Just creates, so it creates what's called the rhizosphere. So that might be a familiar term to some people. If not, it's essentially referring to the soil very close to the roots. And oftentimes this is where, all of your not all, but most of your microbes are going to be around this vicinity. It's estimated that rhizosphere soil may have 1,000 times or greater the number of organisms than the soil just a fraction of an inch away from the
Oh, room. Yes, I remember.
So this is like, this is a hub of microbial growth. So it's actually estimated that 30 to 40% of the plant's photosynthetic production of these carbohydrates comes from the roots, and is fed to microbes. So that's what a lot of their energy is actually going into. And they wouldn't be doing that unless it was very beneficial to them. Yeah. So that's where almost all their energy is going. Or at least 30 to 40% of their energy of that they accumulate in photosynthesis is going into the production of
plants
these carbohydrates.
Plants don't do things just for fun.
No, they do not. So I kind of mentioned that, but essentially what these microbes are doing, they're actually helping protect the plant from maybe some different pathogens. So maybe some harmful bacteria. They're actually going to help keep these out. May have heard of like this kind of concept of how plants and other trees talk to each other. It's a very, what's it called? Not personification, but
oh, I know what you're talking about.
Oh my god,
it's where we think we make the
place our traits onto inanimate objects.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm blanking on it.
Need to read more.
Read a book.
Exactly. Thank you.
I
keep telling
books
me that until
I
do
still
it.
Don't.
I'll have to think of a better excuse. Okay, I'm not going to think of it. Anyway, we're kind of putting our own traits onto things.
Right.
But essentially, this is part of this sort of rhizosphere, and it's a chemical exchange. So the plants aren't actually talking. You know, they're exchanging chemicals that are either giving maybe a warning signal that there's a, you know, maybe a pest nearby that's eating up their leaves or something that's going to actually help the other plants know what's going on. And then it's going to help them have their own start their own defenses. So say there's a tree that has like a bark beetle or something. That particular tree, maybe the pine tree, is going to exude a chemical as sort of a warning. That's typically an underground connection to the roots of the trees nearby. And then say maybe its neighbor, its little brother or something, is going to have a little bit more time to react to the beetles and maybe produce some sort of chemical that'll help stave them off a little bit. And again, the microbes are a big part of this. They're helping kind of deliver these messages. They're really helpful in kind of this transfer of chemicals and various compounds. That's another reason that the plants really want these guys around.
Right. I have a little literary corner right here. So I looked it
up.
Oh,
okay.
So you were actually correct. I guess you were correct. So there's personification, which is what you said. And there's anthropomorphism. So anthropomorphism is when you do that to something that is non-human behaving as a human. So something that's typically living.
Yeah,
like
I think
animals,
that's what I was trying to.
We do that a lot, but personification is where we do it to non-human or abstract things. So it could be. I think you were closer.
Oh, interesting.
I think you were more
accurate. That might be.
Because
it's not non-living, but it's definitely not human.
It's like a, because it's not, I think anthropomorphism is something we do with animals, and I think is the best example, but I think personification is that little toaster movie where we gave them a little personality and he goes to the moon.
That is a great example. Oh, what was that called? I never saw it, but my friend,
I
my god,
loved that
I found
movie.
It so funny.
I think it was The Little Toaster.
Oh yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, The Little Toaster.
Yeah, I loved that movie. There's like three of them, I think. He goes to the moon in one of them. Yeah, The Brave Little Toaster.
In the laundry basket.
Yep. There's the blankie. Oh, yep. So there's actually three. There's the Brave Little Toaster. The Brave Little Toaster goes to Mars.
And, oh, sure.
The Brave Little Toaster on to the rescue, not on the rescue. I was like,
oh, on the rescue.
To the rescue. Yeah, so they've made three. The Brave. It's a very sad, disturbing movie. But recommend. Yeah, because it talks about, like, abandoning objects before Toy Story ever did.
Oh,
it's a really okay. I loved that. It's kind of depressing, so it's kind of a really good adult movie to watch.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You're like, oh wow, they touched on some intense topics for a children's movie.
Yeah, right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like
all I remember.
Yeah, they have to save themselves from the junkyard and getting smashed.
Oh my god,
it's really intense.
That is essentially Toy Story.
Yeah, I recommend. Watching it again as an adult.
I will check it out, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, personification or anthropomorphism.
Mm-hmm.
Either way.
Yep.
They're not talking, but it's very close.
Right.
let's leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, looking into more beneficial fungi.
Mm-hmm.
So the most common one would probably be mycorrhizal fungi.
Right.
There's associations mostly... Okay, God, I already messed it up. there's associations that occur in about 80% of flowering plants and in all gymnosperms as well. Okay. So gymnosperm, if we haven't covered this already, gymnosperms are non-flowering plants. So you think of your pines and things like that. Just to maybe
no, clear. This is good.
So and then just while I'm at it, flowering plants would be angiosperms. Yes. So that's a different. Most of the plants are angiosperms, not as many gymnosperms, but that's the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on. So mycorrhizal fungi. So there's what's called hyphae of the mycorrhizal fungi that establishes contact with host root plants.
Okay.
So what happens there is there's a release of compounds called flavonoids that initiate branching of roots.
Right.
So this kind of allows them, the mycorrhizal fungi actually goes in between the spaces of the cells of the plant roots and actually creates a bridge between the fungi and the plant.
Okay.
So the hyphae are kind of, it's kind of an intrusion, but not so much that it's affecting the plant health. Okay. But they are kind of in between the cell spaces, and they actually help branch out the root hairs so that they, in effect, increase the surface area of the root, as well as providing access to these smaller soil pores or cracks in between different minerals and things like that. This can actually... help them absorb probably 2 to 3 times as much nutrients as they would without this fungal association, without the mycorrhizal fungi.
Right, so they're just, like, increasing the surface area, like, getting in all those gaps and filling it in and expanding even more. Okay, gotcha.
Right, yeah, so they're getting in all the smaller spaces that maybe the roots might have missed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as much as, tenfold
right.
as far as how much space that they can cover. So not only are they doing that, they're also potentially tripling the amount of nutrients that they can uptake.
Wow.
So that's
it sounds like
whole
someone
other ball game.
Who comes into a company is like, I can help fix this.
Let's make this efficient.
Let's make this more profitable.
Let's fire Joe in accounting. Yeah. He's just messing around up there.
He keeps adding the same numbers back to, like, every day.
I have a little bit. I just wanted to touch.
Yeah, touch it.
And I
touch it softly.
I will try to caress it very briefly.
Yeah, do it.
Very light.
I give
you
consent.
I'm just gonna stop giving metaphors. Thank you. Thank you. From afar.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will not ramble too much on this, but human health
uh-huh.
and microorganisms.
Yes.
So intertwined. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool because I think there's a lot more literature out there nowadays about kind of your gut health, your gut microbiome.
Yes.
Thank goodness, because it's super, super important. You know, not only does it just affect, you know, your kind of general, you know, health, well-being, but it can affect your mental well-being as well.
Right.
There's so much kind of more, again, very, very new research, but a lot going on in that field right now. So it's pretty fascinating. But it's super, super important that you're actually doing what you can as far as your diet to kind of help all of the little helpers inside of your digestive system. So again, reading The Hidden Half of Nature is a much more comprehensive than what I'm going to talk about right now. But if you want to explore more on this topic, I highly recommend that. It's pretty cool because the first half is very much more plant soil related. And then the second half, because one of the authors actually got cancer kind of later in life. And this was a huge part of, you know, kind of their own research. That was a lot of you know, kind of, at least their motivation to look more into not only the plant side, but looking at the human side and seeing like, hey, what, you know, what's going on in my body? What can I do as far as, you know, the foods I eat, you know, what's going on there that I can actually maybe stop this from progressing or, you know, kind of get your body back in balance after all that's kind of been through. So super cool story. But anyway, so basically looking back at, you know, what we were just talking about. So we're looking at the interactions of bacteria and fungi with plant roots. This is a direct application to how you should imagine your own digestive system, your own colon. So there are all of these, this little internal ecosystem in our, in our guts that are actually allowing us to digest food as well as fighting off disease. So if you're taking care of your little colony of bacteriums and other fun, whatever is going on down there, you're actually taking care of your entire body. So how do you do this? Like, it sounds like a lofty goal. I briefly mentioned before, like, miso soup is a prebiotic. That's probably one of the best recommendations as far as kind of a little extra boost. So any prebiotic, probiotic foods, I won't get into this because you can look up a list online. It's fairly straightforward. But there's a whole bunch of foods that can kind of naturally boost, you know, your gut health, your microbiome in your gut. But one of the biggest things is eating whole grains. You know, you're not, you really don't want to be eating a lot of simple carbohydrates and sugars, which is like potato chips and, you know, just cakes and, you know, kind of your typical dessert type foods. But you want to be focusing on whole grains. So that's going to be your brown rice, your oats, whole oats, just any sort of whole grain product is really what you want to be focusing on. Obviously, anything vegetable is great. You know, that gives you some fiber. It's really, you're basically providing a feast for your microbiome. And what do they love? They love things that take a long time to break down. So you're looking at, again, your vegetables have all that fiber, all that cellulose that you can't really break down, but those microbes are going to go at it and they're going to break all those nutrients down and they're going to get it into your back into your body and absorb those nutrients just very, very similarly like they do to plants. And in this book, I thought they just had the perfect metaphor. So like, as you would mulch your garden to help your microbes grow and, you know, you're providing that organic matter for them to decompose, you're mulching your colon with whole grains and vegetables. So that's really the best thing you can do is have a diet that's really high in the amount of vegetables. And when you do eat carbohydrates, making sure that they are complex carbohydrates. I can add this to our Instagram post as well, but there's kind of a little sample plate of the diet that
I love that
she was eating for kind of helping, you know, making sure her cancer didn't come back. is just a very good kind of, it kind of like that whole My Plate thing from the government, you know, it's a similar kind of format. So it looks like about half vegetables. And then you're looking at a, you know, a small portion, maybe 25% protein and 25% of the carbohydrates. So somewhere in that range, I'll have to find that again and show it. But, very simple way to break it down, you know, just focus on your veggies, focus on your whole grains, you know, nice healthy proteins and things like that and fats. And that's really, really the best way to just help your gut. And any probiotic or prebiotic foods you can throw in there, that's fantastic.
And drink kombucha all the time. I'm just kidding. Yes. I like it. But
it's good for you. I just, no one will ever convince me to eat it. It's just not gonna happen. I can't do it. It is so gross. It is
so good.
Vinegar. That so tastes like vinegar.
Good.
Yeasty vinegar.
Yes.
That's not my idea of a good time.
Yep. All the yeasty thing. Like, even I'm looking at a list too, and like one of them is beer, a Belgian style beer, like Hoegaarden and West Malle Triple, because they're because they're fermented twice, so they contain a special type of probiotic yeast that can kill harmful bacteria. But it's just like, there's just so many. Obviously, you shouldn't drink that every day. There's alcohol in it, but it's just like you were saying. It's like mulch your garden, like little things you can add to your, like your. There's tons of lists, tons
little
of
bonus.
Stuff. Yeah, just like
yogurt's great. There's really any whole grain or vegetable is what is going to be referred to as a prebiotic. So that's basically a step ahead of probiotic, where that's what your gut bacteria is going to love to eat. It's just going to go crazy for it. Like I said, anything that's a little bit, takes a lot longer to break down. So any sort of simple carbohydrate, that would be just like your typical anything with like made of flour, you know, just breads, pastas, even potatoes for the most part.
The stuff that you could eat a ton of and you don't really get full.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not pasta, but still. It's,
I could eat a ton of pasta. It's that filling.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess I could see that. Yeah. Or even white rice. You know, it's not as fulfilling to your gut either. That's not what your body wants to eat.
Yeah. I could just keep eating rice, but when I eat brown rice, I'm so full. It's crazy.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Like oatmeal, things like that. That's going to be a lot more filling for your little pets.
Yeah.
Your trillions of pets that you're helping. So just, you know, if you don't want to do it for you, just think of your little pets. It's like,
my little flavonoid garden inside.
Yeah. I'll have to look into that. Not sure if that translates exactly, but hey, whatever you need to tell yourself.
Don't
so
till
I have a little. Yes, don't till it. Oh my god, yeah, don't throw up. Jesus.
Yeah.
A lot of metaphors that can come from this. I'll leave with a little quote from the book because I enjoyed this and I think it sums it up very, very succinctly.
Perfect.
So. Just as compost, wood chips, and mulch nourish soil life, the same is true of the foods that nourish the symbiotic inhabitants of our gut. While a living soil will ripple above the ground to support the health and resilience of the garden or farm, your inner soil supports another kind of garden, your body. If we cultivate the microbes that benefit us, they'll help fend off their pathogenic cousins and keep our immune system working for us rather than turning against us.
Beautiful.
That is From the Hidden Half of Nature. Beautiful, beautiful book. Highly recommend it.
Yep.
That was my best attempt to summarize everything in there. It's very hard. There's a lot going on there. I hope I touched on some interesting stuff.
So many body garden metaphors that I could get into.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of material here.
Yeah.
But I guess all that's left, maybe one last little pun battle here. And
I say... we can just try to come up as many metaphors comparing our body and gardens as much as possible. Or pumps.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I'm down.
You down?
That. I'll get a timer.
Okay.
Or if we need this to be timed.
We
can keep
should
going
time
if we
it.
Actually
we
think
could,
of more.
This could be years.
This is true.
There's so many comparisons to bodies and gardens.
I'm very excited to see what you're coming up with here. Okay, let's do it. Okay. And go.
Oh man, I really gotta trim that topiary.
Oh no. Well, we went straight for that.
It's been on my mind this whole conversation.
Gosh.
Oh god. Gotta scrub those stones, man. They're getting really dirty out in the garden. I have no idea where I was going with that one.
I don't know either, but that's okay.
I left the sprinkler on. Oh, God. Let's see. What's another good body?
Oh, gosh. Forgot to comb the...
Rake the leaves.
Yeah.
keeps the grass clean and clear.
Yep.
I gotta stop digging into my soil and protect that good surface.
Okay, that's time.
Yeah, good. It's getting weird.
Getting weird?
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plantaholics.
Hope you can join us next week for more plant talk.
In the meantime, you can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, or visit our website at plantaholicspodcast.com.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next time.